Brought to you by Black Knight, the Technology.ie podcast. Episode 40 for August 16th, 2012, with Michaela Nalum. Good evening and welcome to the Technology.ie podcast. And this week, I'm not joined by Conor Wienercom because Conor wasn't available this evening. But I am joined by a super duper guest, Mr. Pinky Brand, who's currently based in Dublin. And Pinky is currently working with a company called Domain Diction, and he's going to be talking to us a bit later in the show about what they do. But let's just say that Pinky has how many years experience in the domain industry, Pinky?
16, 17. I'm going to do the math. I've been involved with it since 1996.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it seems like ages. Oh my God.
So you've never thought about changing career and going off to join the circus or anything?
Yeah, a few times I've kind of scratched my head going, what am I doing here? I may as well go off and do something different. But no, I guess it just gets in your blood. And ever since I first saw the Who Is site back in 1996 and, you know, where you could basically search to find out if a domain name was available, you know, such as yourname.ie or whatever, I've been kind of hooked, you know, when I saw certain companies, you know, didn't have their name or certain names, you know, were available. I was just astonished and have been just loving the business ever since.
Well, that's cool. And there's a lot of stuff changing at the moment, and we'll be talking to you about that later. But before we do that, I collected together a few links to a few stories that caught my eye over the last couple of days. So I shared those with you. And earlier today, I mentioned one of them to you. It was this thing with Facebook's latest idea of getting to people before they're even born.
I know. That is just... it is a little bit creepy. I went and looked at the timeline and I didn't realize that, you know, you could add all these life events, such as a new baby. I didn't see it available for me. But it does sound like it's maybe a move just to market. I guess if you're expecting a baby, then now Facebook knows officially they can tell their advertisers, look at all these people who've got babies on the way.
Yeah, that was something I was thinking about as well. I mean, I'm looking here. If you go to the life event option, you can have, let's see, work and education, new job, retirement, military service, published a book, family and relationship, new child, new family member, new pet, loss of a loved one. You can buy a house, do up your house, get a new car. You can even put in things like your weight loss, that you've broken bones, removed braces, started a new hobby, learned a new language. I mean, there's a whole range of these things. I mean, what do you think Facebook's end game here is?
Yeah, I think they're just running a business. You know, they've got is getting close to a billion users, although I think X percent of them are now claimed to be fake. But it just sounds to me, you know, that being a public company and all, that they've got revenue pressure. And now, if you think about it, I mean, it's a way of collecting data. I mean, I'm not a big data expert, but, you know, you've been able to put in your Facebook status that you maybe got a baby on the way, but now by somehow putting that in a particular data set, it can collect that information probably quite quickly and resell that information, or at least resell the database to their advertisers, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I don't know if you were following their recent earnings reports where they were talking about how they'd had terrible problems monetizing mobile.
Yeah, I think mobile is a challenge for them. I note when I'm on my Samsung Galaxy S2 and then I look on my partner's iPhone or I look on my iPad, I mean, I'm getting different results, and sometimes it's a little bit annoying, but I mean, it's a free service, so I guess how annoyed can one get? But I've noticed some strange stuff going on. But I guess I've got an old colleague actually from my .mobi days in Dublin, who now is in charge of the mobile sort of, I guess, evangelizing mobile to developers out there. So I guess they're trying to do something about it.
Would this be Andrea?
No, actually, James Pierce. James Pierce used to be our the CTO when I was at .mobi. And he went to go work for Sensha, I believe it is. And then now he's one of the big Facebook mobile guys in the United States. Andrea, I think you're thinking Andrea Trissati, used to be with .mobi as well. He did a lot as it relates to device detection for mobile devices, which is really a lot of, it's, you know, one of these crazy technical things, but a lot of people don't understand. But he's a really smart guy. He's now working for Nokia.
Yeah, I think I saw something about that. I think they're trying to revamp certain things. I mean, maybe it's a little, do you think they still have the chance to do that, or do you think it's too little too late?
Nokia? Yeah, I've been reading some of their reports. I mean, it just seems, you know, they've been betting the farm on certain kind of business models, and it, I guess it's not working for them. I mean, they switched operating systems, right?
Yeah.
You know, Nokia has been known for a long time to make devices. They have a really, I think at one time, maybe Samsung's taking them over, I don't know for sure, but, and they were selling like a million phones a day or something. I mean, I'm not the expert on the actual numbers, but a lot of their markets seem to be in the developing countries and just basic phones.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it's one thing Colin and I have talked about a couple of times in the past, and we had one of your former colleagues on, Francesco. I think we discussed that a little bit with him as well. Yeah, the you know, the developing world is an area where there, you know, there's still huge potential for growth. It's going to be interesting to see how a lot of this stuff pans out over the next couple of years. But I mean, talking about new technologies, another one we came across was this thing with Disney and using plants as input devices or some way of interacting with computers. Did you have a chance to look at that video?
Yeah, I saw that. I was just blown away. You know, it was kind of, at first it just immediately reminded me of a type of lamp that I've had before, where, you know, you simply just touch the lamp to turn it on and off, or to, you know, up the brightness or whatever. And you can do that the lazy man way by just laying in bed and touching it without having to get up. And so I was thinking, well, that's all they're doing. It's just some kind of little toy they're going to sell. But then I watched the second video they had, and I was just going, wow, you know, you just never know what guys in the garage are doing today. They seem to be working on, you know, I don't know what they're working on. I'm trying to figure out why they would do it. Maybe they're going to somehow create something at Disneyland, you know, where children and people can interact with plants, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the thing, I mean, you know, it's one thing that I've thought about for a long time as well is, you know, we're still interacting with computers in a very kind of archaic fashion. I mean, the keyboard is the same, is practically the same thing as on an old typewriter. You know, the mouse has barely changed. I mean, sure, we've had, you know, advanced ones, you get the gaming ones, you can adjust the weight and the balance, but you're still using a mouse to interact with the computer. I mean, being able to do these things with organic material like plants, I mean, what's next? I mean, are we going to have something built into our bodies, do you think?
Yeah, it's kind of, it is interesting. I was thinking of like mood rings and that sort of thing, you know, where you wear them on your body and it kind of alerts people as to, you know, that sort of thing. But as I was watching the video, you know, the gears were turning in my brain, you know, just thinking, you know, how can this possibly be applied to humans, you know, and, or just using these kinds of materials, these, you know, the plants themselves, the fibers to conduct electricity or regenerate electricity or something. I don't know. It's more complicated than my mind probably was able to deal with today, but it just goes to show that there are people thinking about all kinds of interesting things that have potential application, you know, in a marketplace. I'm sure that Disney's not just doing this just to, you know,
it's not for fun. I mean,
it's not fun. Yeah, you know, they're a company, they're a public company as well. So There's got to be an end game for them on this.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was looking at, there was another report, I think it was in this weekend's Sunday Business Post, where Disney was reporting that they've managed to increase their profits this quarter. They made a massive loss the last quarter. That movie, what was it, John Carter, I think it was. They spent millions on it, and then it totally tanked at the box office.
Oh, wow. You know, I must admit, I haven't watched very many movies at all lately. I know you're quite the movie buff.
But that's okay. So so I won't talk to you about the new Bourne film or Total Recall or anything like that, Pinky. Don't worry.
Don't ask me that. I'm really boring right now when it comes to movies, I must say. And my I probably really do need to go watch some movies. But I've been so turned off away from that. I don't mean not wanting to see them or watch them, but just so busy with other things and other priorities. I just... amazing that I have a degree in radio, television, and film, and I'm not watching movies or going to the movie theater.
Well, do you play cards, Pinky?
I have played cards on occasion, not lately.
But... so, I mean, there's this other thing I came across was this custom personalized playing cards where you use your Facebook friends for the designs on the cards.
I saw that. I mean... That's you know, I think the comment was, it was pretty good, you know, who gets to be the ace of spades, you know, and who's the two of clubs, who's the joker. But didn't someone involved in the internet industry do that for people that are sort of in the domain industry or something?
Yeah, IconWiki, which is a community site for anybody and anybody involved in the domain industry. They've produced several sets over the last year or two. I think you might. Did you make it into a deck yet?
I don't know if they had me in the deck. I don't think I was in the deck. I don't think I made it. I guess I didn't make the cut.
Neither did I. I'll have to raise this with them. You know, obviously I'm not controversial enough. But I mean, you know, a lot of people are in there. I mean, a lot of well-known names in the domain industry. I mean, you know, there's a lot of them, but yeah, each one has their own card, which I thought, it's an interesting idea. The thing with the Facebook thing was, you know, you're doing it with your friends, so I don't know, what happens if they're not your friend anymore? What happens if you choose somebody who's a bit too sensitive or very, very private? I don't know.
Why would someone order that? I mean, would you send it to someone as a gift and say, congratulations, you made the deck, and then they get upset with you exactly because they're the three of hearts?
I don't know. I mean, this was the thing. I mean, I was poking around. Somebody sent me a link to something else. There was a custom thing built on a person's tweets.
Uh-huh.
Which I thought, you know, that's kind of interesting, because what they did was they created this image, like a standard image, but when you looked at it more closely, it was made up from tweets. And I thought, okay, that's kind of cool. It's a bit kind of Monet-esque or something. I mean, it's not Monet, the guy who used to do the pointillism, can't remember his name. And I thought that was kind of cool visually. And I went poking around, discovered that the same company, it was actually Firebox, had a whole load of these other personalized products, and you could have, you know, a personalized superhero, a personalized London street sign, an Instagram poster. Okay, that was a bit pedestrian, but there's things like, you know, what was the one here? Yeah, a personalized Monopoly.
Oh yeah, well, the personalized Monopoly I've heard about before. I've seen that. I mean, companies do that. My old business partner actually did that with. I think domain names at one point, and I think there's been somebody did that along with ICANN too, and registrars and.
Yeah, that was Key Systems, I think it was.
Yeah, that's right. Because actually, I got one as a gift. Yeah.
I mean, but there's all these crazy ones I was looking at here, like which I thought were a bit creepy, like a 3D printed head.
Okay.
So I don't know. I mean. I'm looking at this, like, you know, the stalker in me is kind of going, okay, so, you know, maybe I can't have this person, but I could have a 3D printed head. Okay, that's creepy. Or maybe if, you know, if you idolize somebody, you could have that. But, you know, would you want a printed head of yourself?
Yeah, that seems a little bit, you know, or a bobblehead or that sort of thing. I'm not sure I'd want that. But, I mean, I can see how a company like that would do, anyone that maybe they can take something that's popular digitally and turn it into something that is physical and real. Seems like, I guess they've got a business model going there.
Well, I mean, the one which I thought was very funny a couple of years back, what was it? The personalized toilet paper.
Oh, dear.
Which was, I think it was generated based on your Twitter stream or something like that. And then there was another series where they had Twitter mugs, which was made up of all the, where the mug was covered in the avatars of your Twitter friends. And then there was another one again, which was T-shirts with memorable tweets.
Well, the best one I've ever seen, and I still have them, is semi-personalized boxer shorts with domain names printed all over them.
Were these domains that you held yourself?
No, or? Actually, no. I got it probably 10 years ago as a gift. And, you know, I was collecting anything that had sort of domain names on them, you know, sort of creating my own little domain name museum. And I thought that someone gave me the boxers.
Okay. That's pretty cool. I mean, a bit weird, but okay.
Your name, whatever.com. But anyway, too much information.
Well, what we can do is just a couple of other quick ones there. The other one, big story for anybody who's involved in search engine optimization, is that Google's changing their algorithm yet again, and they're now going to be penalizing what they consider to be repeat copyright infringers. So if a website is consistently being reported for copyright abuse, it could be penalized in the search engine results. I don't know if you saw that story.
I did see the headline. I must admit I didn't read through the whole thing, but it sounds like you know, once again they're just making a change to try to make results more relevant to users, or maybe sort of somehow being copyright cops in a way.
Well, I mean, there was a bit of discussion about this on the technology.ie blog, and I've seen, you know, a lot of reactions to the story elsewhere as well. And one of the things that you know, a couple of us raised as an issue would be that, you know, copyright trolls could use this and abuse it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And the other thing is, you know, that you could have people generating, how would you describe it, fraudulent copyright claims, suggest to penalize their competitors.
Interesting. Yes. It's almost like pay-per-click fraud and all that sort of thing. Interesting how they would be able to police something like that.
Well, the Google released some figures a few weeks back about the number of copyright claims that they get per year, and then a breakdown by the countries and all this kind of thing. And one of the statistics that really leapt off the page at me was, in the past 30 days, Google has processed over 4.3 million URL removal requests.
Wow.
Which is significant, no matter how you crunch it. That's a huge amount of complaints.
You know, I think that kind of stuff is only going to grow, and there's going to be more and more issues, not just for that sort of thing, but even for, I was just thinking about images the other day and image searching and how that might affect people in the future. And it could affect people in Google searches and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, now there's all this recognition technology out there, right? So that your face can be recognized, you know, in a crowd and all that. And someone right now has to tag you, right, in order to be tagged. But what happens when the technology gets to the point, and I'm sure the technology has existed and is being used already, where, you know, you've ever been in a crowd somewhere, or you've been in a party, or you've been public monument or someplace where there are a lot of tourists and all that, and you know your photo is being taken. You know, you're in a public place.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know. You don't know where that might pop up somewhere. And imagine if the technology is there to actually look and search for all those pictures that are posted online that have you. And I'm sure there's something out there already. But it'd be kind of like whack-a-mole. I mean, on the one hand, if you're dishonest and you told, you know, your boss that that you were working, and someone says, well, no, there's a photo that's time-stamped and you're at a pub somewhere, or someone's using it because of an illicit relationship or something like that. But also just privacy purposes, I can see how that sort of thing is going to be potentially maybe a business model for someone. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're a Mac user, aren't you, Pinky?
I do. I use my MacBook Air proudly.
Okay, so have you got the latest version of iPhoto installed?
Yeah, the one that that hung in the middle and forced me to actually abandon doing my upgrade. I think I've got the latest one. I haven't done the latest upgrade to the latest operating system yet.
Okay, well, one of the things they introduced, I mean, I think it might have been a couple of versions back, I'm not 100% sure exactly when, is this option in there, and what it'll do is it'll scan all the photos you have in your iPhoto collection.
Yeah.
And it allows you to start identifying people, and once you've identified the faces, it will then go off and search through the rest of the images and suggest images, photos with those faces in them.
Oh yeah, that's kind of what the Google Picasa does already. It's been doing that for a couple of years, similar, I think.
Mm.
Which I've been using extensively for years, actually, the Picasa. And you can basically, it will search for, you know, the photo, and you tag that person, and then it will suggest, okay, do all these other people, or is this Michaela? And I can go, yeah, it is. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. No, it's not. And it eventually kind of learns to the point where even if it's a side view of you, it figures out that it's Michaela.
Yeah.
And, if you've got time on your hands and you want to do that sort of thing, you can do that. And it, so I've always thought that was somewhat of a precursor to potentially more nasty technology or creepy technology or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it could be very useful technology for surveillance and that sort of thing. But imagine, again, if all of a sudden, you know, photos of you are popping up and people's photos that you don't even know, and all of a sudden you've got a situation that potentially is out of control.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one of the things that just thinking about this now, imagine the number of images, say, on Facebook, Google Plus, and various other services where, you know, the people are identified. So if you can actually pull that data in, you'd already have a huge data set.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, assuming, of course, that it's, you know, relatively accurate, I don't know how hard would it be to, you know, push that further, use that elsewhere. It's kind of scary. Okay, so look, we've talked enough about the big bad world. We're going to take a quick break here for an advertising message from the show sponsor, and then we'll get on to having a chat with you about all the cool things you're doing and cool things you're going to be doing over the next year or so. Okay.
Sure.
So anyway, the technology.ie podcast is brought to you by Black Knight, Ireland's leading hosting and domain registration company, of which, of course, I'm the managing director. And at the moment, we're running a couple of really cool offers on .co and .me domain names. And if you register a .co or a .me domain at the same time as you buy one of our hosting plans, you can get a big discount on the domain name or even a free domain name. And all the details of all these current offers are over on domainoffers.me. Right then, we're back and we're talking to Pinky Brand. So Pinky, what's the name of the company you're working for now?
Domain Diction at domaindiction.com.
And what is that company going to do?
So what we're doing is we are an international marketing consultancy for companies that have applied for these new top-level domain extensions, so such as, you know, your name dot, I'm sorry, such as dot BMW, for instance, dot Delta, or dot Chanel, or dot City, that sort of thing. So what we're doing is we are helping these companies that have applied for these new top-level domain extensions, we're helping them with their market entry. So basically getting the word out to the general public or to their particular target markets on who might be interested in registering, you know, a dot hotel name, for instance, or a dot ski name, or any of these practically almost 2,000 domains that have been applied for. So we're helping them build sales, marketing, and distribution programs. We're basically trying to talk to a number of companies who have applied for these extensions who know they've got an asset, but they're not necessarily certain what to do with it or all the nuances of the domain name business and working with domain name registrars such as yourself and others around the world.
So, I mean, just let's go through a couple of things here. Okay, it was $185,000 US to apply for a new top-level domain. And of course, there would have been other costs associated with doing an application, and you have to show ICANN that you've got enough money to do this, and you're not a criminal, and you're not going to go out of business in 6 months' time.
Yeah.
So, are there many of the applicants, say, for these, you know, dot brand applications, be it dot BMW or dot whatever, that didn't really have a plan on what they were going to do with the domain extension when they got it?
I believe that's the case, because in the previous domain name businesses that I have owned, I was amazed at how many of these large corporations who had quite valuable domain names with significant traffic were not educated on registering their domains and protecting them as it relates to trademarks and products and all that. So it's not surprising to me that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing in some of these companies. Sometimes domain name registration or protection falls into the legal side of a company. Sometimes the legal people are not talking to the marketing people. The marketing people may not even be aware that the company even owns a certain set of domain names. So it doesn't surprise me.
Okay, but so let's say that, leaving aside these dot brand ones, which are going to probably be a bit special in some respects. Let's say, for example, I own a hotel here in Carlow, and there's dot hotel, there's dot Carlow exists, and there's all these other domain extensions. I mean, what kind of advice would you be giving to me as a hotel owner? What should I be doing?
Yeah, that's a good question, because if you own a hotel and you own a hotel in Carlow, should you register, you know, the name of your hotel dot hotel? So let's say you are, I'm just trying to think, Jury's is a chain in, you know, here in Ireland. And so if there was Jury's Carlow, would you register Jury's Carlow, you know, dot hotel? If you already have Jury's.ie or Jury's Carlow.ie or Jury's Carlow.com, you know, why would you need this?
Yeah.
So, you know, what if you are, I don't know for a fact because there's so many of these TLDs, but if there's a dot vacation, you know, would you want to register Jury's hotel.vacation just in case someone's looking for a vacation in Carlow and somehow needs to find you? So I think one of the answers I would give right now is that look at the fact that companies like Google, for instance, have applied for quite a few of these new top-level extensions. You know, as we all know, search is very important with the domain business, and having a relevant domain as it relates to a search being performed by anyone for any particular service or product on the internet, it is important to have that.
Mm.
No one really knows, I don't think anyone knows at the moment, what Google's exact plans are, but we all know that they've spent a lot of money, 185,000 times
101
applications. Now, for them, you know, that's probably a few hours revenue. But, you know, there are companies out there such as, you know, brands who have applied for these top-level extensions. And as you said, 185,000, that's just to apply. You still have to put in money should anyone object. You have to pay to object. You have to pay domain name registries to run your registry for you unless you choose to somehow do it yourself. You have to determine, let's say if you're BMW, for instance, you would have to understand what is going to be your string logic. And what I mean by that is right now you might have bmw.com/330i, mm-hmm. or you own 330i.com, or you might be delegating, what, you know, I'm getting a little technical here, a third level domain such as 330i.bmw.com. And then you have an employee who's maybe mary.smith@bmw.com. Just simple things like that. How are you going to do your naming moving forward? You know, is it going to be 330i.bmw? I mean, if you have bmw.com and that's your main point of entry, what, you know, do you abandon that, or do you just become just .bmw? Can someone just simply type .bmw in their browser? Will that get them somewhere? Or do you have to have home.bmw as your main, you know, point of entry?
Well, you can't have .bmw anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that technically, but, you know, but I think that's something that a lot of folks maybe haven't wrapped their head around yet, is just understanding how to even use their new domain extension and how to use that for simple things just like email or simple for products and that sort of thing. And you asked the question earlier, you know, maybe some of these companies are not really sure what they were going to do with their domain. Some of them probably registered them for defensive purposes. Simply, at first, it was cheap relative to a lot of other initiatives they may have to take on to just go ahead and register it and at least have that asset in the event that that this whole new top-level domain extension thing really catches on.
Just cutting across you there, Pinky, just, I mean, okay, in a previous life, I know you used to work with a lot of big corporates for, like, kind of brand protection registrations and things like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's say taking these really big companies. So let's say you've got a big company, but they haven't applied for dot company name, so they haven't applied for dot BMW. Then let's say they're a big company, and at the moment they're registering a lot of domains in .com and a whole load of country codes and other top level domains. I mean, based on your experience, how many domain names are some of those companies currently registering and managing? I mean, ballpark.
Like, I can tell you that. Can you still hear me? It sounded like we're cutting out there.
We're okay.
We're still there. Okay, good. I would say, I won't name them, but I'd say one of my larger clients who has applied for a top-level domain has over 20,000 domain names in their inventory.
Wow.
I have a client, or I should say a former client, that is a church. You'd be amazed how many domain names churches own. I'm talking the larger organization, the controlling, you know, branch or whatever of a particular faith,
mm-hmm.
Owning thousands of domain names. It's amazing. Now, that being said, I mean, that's a little bit more of the exception. I would say a lot of them have hundreds of domain names, in the hundreds, for different products, maybe for different types of reasons. The domain names were registered, and not just in .com, but also in various country codes. And that was primary part of my business, and the reason why I got in the domain name business was because a lot of American companies, as you can tell, I'm American, not Irish, even though I live here. But
you're an honorary Irishman at this stage, Pinky. Come on, let's face it.
I've been here 4 years. It's good enough, right? Originally, a lot of these companies were not even aware that domains, country code domains such as .ie existed, that they needed to protect themselves in these places. So the companies, or you'd be amazed how many domain names that they own. And so, but if you think about it also, some domain investors, otherwise known as domainers, you know, in within the industry, you know, if you sit and look at it, generic names such as .hotel, if you were to buy hotel.com today, you know, it would probably cost you hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more than a million. But you can own .hotel for $185, at least to start.
Yeah.
And by the time you turn the lights on, you know, and you pay the lawyers and you pay consultants like us and you pay, you know, pay out the wazoo basically for everything you needed to go just to get going, you know, to launch your first, you know, Sunrise and all that, you know, you've spent $500,000. So, but that still could be quite cheap compared to what it would cost to buy the .com name outright. It's still a risk, you know. We all, well, not everyone, all the listeners here may not be in, know about all the nuances of the domain business, but, you know, there are a lot of people out there that think that potentially these new top-level domains, you know, are not going to work, that they will not be a success. But, you know, there are equally others that see that there are new business models out there. And just talking to clients about some of the things they're thinking of doing with the domain names, I have to say, are quite different from what most people are used to. And, you know, for instance, a bank, for instance, one of the reasons why a bank might be using their own domain name is for security purposes, or at least to at least provide a greater perception of security. So that when you receive an email from, say, dot, you know, Citi, and Citibank, they're not a client, but I just happen to mention them because they were in the news today. I saw some comments about someone talking about that.
This is dot C-I-T-I as opposed to dot C-I-T-Y.
Citibank, a large bank out of the United States. You know, that would be authenticated communication, that if you received an email from, you know, accounts at .city, that's real. I know that one of my largest clients that I had in the traditional sort of, the main reason why they wanted to get their TLD was they wanted to use it for internal purposes, for a secure email and that sort of thing. So not necessarily everything's going to be used in a public facing way for the corporate domains, but many of them are also thinking of using their domain to come up with new ways to engage their customers, their resellers, their suppliers, their licensees, and that sort of thing. They want to be able to completely control that entire system, and they believe that they can do this. They can allocate their own names the way they want to, and completely reshape the way that they do business. But I'd have to say it's. Anyone trying this right now is going to be a pioneer.
So I mean, just, you know, let's talk practical stuff here. And I know that some of these questions are, nobody has a fixed answer, but, you know, let's ask you anyway. How long do you think it'll be before somebody will be able to register their company name, say .London or .Paris or their company .LTD or .web? I mean, how long before we'll actually see these domains going live?
Well, if you believe the news coming out of the organization that controls this, which is ICANN, and you and I are very familiar with that, but listeners may not be, but ICANN is this nonprofit organization in the United States that basically controls the naming system for the internet, the domain names. I'm oversimplifying here, but they're saying that it's going to be the end of next year. My understanding is maybe about midpoint of next year. They're talking about some sort of a metering program, which hasn't been even decided yet on how that. What I mean by that is how they're going to actually let these things trickle out, or are they going to let them out in a flood, or are they going to let three or four out a day? So I guess the long answer to this is it's probably going to be towards the end of next year at the earliest, if everything goes perfectly according to plan.
But do you think that some of the applicants will have gone out of business by then, or do you think you're going to see companies changing hands? I mean, will all of these applicants still be around by the time their domains go live?
You know, Mikhail, I think that there's, I'm not sure how many people have thought about that, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that sort of thing happen. You know, I mean, there are a number of parties, as you know, that have applied for the same domain. So some are companies that appear to be well-funded. Some are known to be very well-funded because they're public, like Google and others. And others are, you know, entrepreneurial type people that somehow managed to scrape together $185,000. And I have to believe that some of these people are just not going to make it through, and they're going to have to start negotiating, and there may be some fire sales. And how is ICANN going to handle this, or how will this be handled, and how will it affect the overall public perception about the new top-level domains? Because there's been some news out there that these are coming, but if it takes too long for them to get there, the public will then sort of perhaps wear thin from that. But I still don't believe the public is really completely aware of these.
Yeah, well, I mean, this, it's one of those things that, you know, I think for many of us, we're in this little bubble within ICANN, the domain industry. We know about it, but ultimately we're not the people we have to sell this to. I mean, you have to persuade Joe Punter, the guy with the small business or the medium-sized business, that he needs to register these domain names.
Exactly. I mean, so if you're, you know, what does that mean to someone who is, you know, again, sitting somewhere here in Ireland or wherever someone may be listening, but, and they're just going, well, how does this affect me? How does this affect my business? You know, should I be concerned, or should I be, you know, registering in these new domains? And the thing is I would just say, you know, you don't have to be immediately concerned about it, because no one knows exactly which domains will be allocated. But it does have the potential to change search. It does have the potential to change the way consumers think about things. I agree with you. We're kind of in a bubble. Sometimes we kind of see things maybe one way, but I'm continually astounded by some of the business models or some of the ideas people are coming up with. And having been an entrepreneur, I've learned not necessarily to laugh at all those sometimes, because you never know what may end up being a really big thing.
But I mean, let's say, like, over the last couple of years, we've seen a few new domain extensions come out. Some of them have been very, very successful, and some have been, well, how can I put this diplomatically, not as successful. I mean, take, for example, .tel. I mean, the technology's pretty cool, the concept's pretty cool, but they're not doing the numbers. There hasn't been the kind of take up that they would need. I mean, how many names do they have now? Less than 500,000 or something?
Yeah, .tel. I mean, I think a lot of us in the industry thought it was really kind of cool, you know, what they were doing, and you know, I was involved with one of the new top-level domains, .mobi, which was actually based right out of Dublin, which was aimed at the mobile users and mobile businesses out there that want to reach, you know, consumers and users on mobile devices. And I guess the question is, what defines success? Because, you know, if you look at the domain name business as a business, and it is a business, and it's an industry, and domain name registries need to make money, unless they've just got somebody who's quite philanthropic at the top and doesn't really care. I always have said that the new domains, any new domain that's introduced or marketed, it must be relevant somehow to someone to be successful. But success can be defined in many ways. Look at .cat, for example. .cat is for the Catalan-speaking crowd, and I don't know what the numbers are, but they're not huge.
Well, it's less than 100,000, as far as I recall.
But it would be arguably a success for what they intended to do.
Oh, totally, totally.
But they may not be. They're not the next .com. They're not even close to, you know, being in the top 10 of top level domains in the world. .mobi, which I, again, work for, has about 1 million domains. Would we have liked to have had, you know, 10 million? Of course. But is it Can it make money at 1 million? Yes, it can make money. So it depends on why you get into it.
But do you think that some of the companies that have applied for new top-level domains, I mean, not the .cities, and I'm not talking about the .brand, .business name type ones, but, you know, some of these ones that are going for open, more generic extensions, do you think that some of them are trying to become the new .com?
Well, they may be. Some of them might be, but I would say you've got a really long road ahead of you. And I think just the experience I had at the years that I was at .mobi, which was 6 years, it is not easy to project yourself on a global scale and do it continually and have the resources available to you, especially when there are people out there within your own industry that may think that you shouldn't exist. There are people right now that don't think the new top-level domains exist. And I believe that if you took all of the new top-level domains, new is maybe the ones that have been put out in recent years, such as .info and .biz, which some of your listeners may be aware of, you know, they actually have sizable domain registrations and probably do quite well for their domain registries from a business standpoint. There are also domains such as .arrow and .museum, .co-op, .jobs, which some people may have never even heard of. And they could be described by domainers, people who are investing in domain names, as flops, perhaps. But if they're serving their mission and they're turning a profit, then perhaps that's okay. But I think that anyone out there, any of these guys out there trying to thinking they're going to make a big hit and somehow are going to get 20 or 30 million domain names, I just would remind them that even at this stage with over 200 million domain names out there, you know, the second largest player is, I believe, .de, Germany, and .co.uk. They're both, I think, kind of neck and neck.
Yeah.
With more than 10 million registrations each. And .org, I believe, is now at 10 million, which is pretty well known. You know, I mean, I think if you walk on the street and you ask people about .com, .net, .org, they're going to know what that is. And if you ask someone in Ireland, you know, what .ie is, they're probably going to know what that is. But if you ask them about, you know, .jobs or .tel, you're probably going to get blank stares.
Oh, I totally agree. Totally agree.
You know, what happens when someone decides to introduce, a new, again, one of these top-level domains is just quite generic in nature. So, you know, domains like .london, these new geographic domains like .london, I think those will probably do pretty well. That's relevant, and it's probably relevant to a lot of businesses and consumers and for search and that sort of reason. I think those will do fairly well.
Just cutting across you again, sorry. It's great. You're a great guest to have, by the way, Bingy, because you quite happily talk, which is wonderful. Just coming back to, you know, just going back to our little businessman or individual or whatever, I mean, do you think that they're going to get a bit of a shock when it comes to the price of these new domains? Because I don't think, from what I've seen, that you're going to see them being priced as low as .com is at the moment.
Yeah, depending on again on the business model, they could be in for a shock. Some of these domains may be asking for a lot more money, but they might be able to do that if they can deliver value beyond just the domain. So, in other words, if you are, let's just go take the example of a hotel in Carlo again. If someone at .hotel, and I don't represent .hotel, by the way, they're not my client. So
well, there's more than one applicant anyway.
We can poke fun at them, but if let's just say I'm a hotel in .carlo, I would think that if someone like .hotel, that they're going to need to provide something more than just the domain. They're going to have to provide some other service that's going to be relevant to the hotel. That would make them say, that's worth signing up. You know, maybe it's something like, if you sign up for .hotel, domain name, you know, we are going to get you discounts on all these services that, you know, you as a hotel might be consuming, such as laundry services and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I know this is probably not exactly what they would do, but...
It's an example, though. I mean, it's a value add.
And so I think that it's going to have these value adds there. I mean, that's kind of what we did with Mobi. I mean, it was, I mean, honestly, you know, with Mobi, early on, it was a little bit more of a struggle. I mean, we actually got a lot of domain names registered very quickly, but as time went on, you know, and with the introduction of the iPhone and so forth, people were starting to go, well, what can I do with this domain name, you know? And so with .mobi, they started introducing, you know, products like GoMobi, for instance, which would help a small business build a mobile website. So if you are a hotel in Carlo, you know, what can you do with .mobi right now? You know, well, you could buy a GoMobi site, and, you know, at least people who might be searching for hotels in Carlo would perhaps get information about your hotel very quickly. So that's a value add. So I think that's what's going to happen in order for businesses to want to pay the money, because I've seen, at least, and I maybe, you know, you've seen it as a domain name registrar, but depending on the price, it has a lot to do with what people will pay for things. They have to see value in it.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's a constant thing. I mean, you look at, I was having a conversation with somebody earlier today, and, you know, the thing is, in many respects, your standard domain name, it's just a domain name. I mean, there's nothing magical or special about it, regardless of what the domain registry might want you to believe. I mean, it's just a way of accessing a service, be that email, a website, a web service, an app, an iPhone app. I mean, you know, it's just a way of accessing that. It's a means to an end. It's not an end in itself.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a business in Ireland, and you want to attract, you know, business or online or even the traditional offline way, and you're just doing it merely for information, you know, you've got to have a .ie domain name. I mean, it just makes perfect sense. I mean, there's not a whole lot of value add. I mean, there is other things that businesses need. We all need, you know, they need hosting, they need email, all these sorts of things. But still, you know, in order for someone to even think about, a particular domain, I mean, that makes sense. It's very relevant. Everyone knows what .com is. So if someone's going to try to sell them a .hotel, they're going to have to say, well, how does this, if I spend $50 for this domain name, how is that going to add to my business this year? Am I going to get more bookings? Am I going to get more reviews? You know, what does that mean to me? So I think businesses are going to have to be shown that they can make money from that. And that's just, as you know, that's just one end of the business. I mean, the other end is convincing the distribution channel for the domain names, i.e. the people that sell them, such as yourselves and others, that this domain is worth showing to your customers. Is it something that they really want?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think this is something that we're going to have to come back to again, and I hope you'll come back on the show maybe in, you know, I mean, hopefully before then, but, you know, after we've actually got these new top level domains out there, and to see, you know, just let's come back to this and see, you know, what people have actually done with them and what kind of value adds and propositions people have come up with, and maybe your clients will have come up with the coolest things out there. Who knows?
Yeah, that's what we aim to do, is to try to help them communicate to what that value is going to be to not only to their distribution channel but to the public.
And so if people wanted to find out more about what Domain Diction are doing, then it's domaindiction.com and at Domain Diction on Twitter as well, I believe. Is that right?
That's correct.
And, of course, you are Pinky Brand, at Pinky Brand on Twitter, I think.
Yeah, at Pinky Brand on Twitter, or pinkybrand.com is my personal email. I mean, sorry, my personal web address, if any of your listeners, for whatever reason, want to contact me.
Well, maybe they want to have a look at some of your photos as well, because apart from being a super-duper domain expert, you're also a very accomplished photographer.
Well, thank you. I have been taking pictures since I was probably 10 or 11 years old, and had a dark room when I was growing up, and I've always just enjoyed photography immensely. And I was listening to your podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think, and you were talking about some newfangled camera that you got. I was going, what does Michaela have that I don't have that I need to go out and...
I don't have it yet. This is one of... This is really, really traumatizing me. It's the new Panasonic... what the hell is the model number now? I can't remember the name of it now. It's a new Panasonic Wi-Fi-enabled camera that can also hook into your smartphone. So you can use your smartphone to control it.
Yeah, I think that's really pretty cool. I looked at buying... I bought one at the Dublin airport about a couple of months ago, kind of on a whim. But I thought about getting one that had the Wi-Fi, you know, the Wi-Fi card that goes in it. But in the end, I decided that I didn't want that. I was going to wait for something like exactly what you were talking about.
Well, I mean, I've got the Wi-Fi card, the iFi.
Yeah.
And... I mean, the technology is really, really cool. I mean, hey, we're going way off topic here, but hey, what's new? What's new for this podcast? Because what you can do is you basically set up a kind of a private Wi-Fi network between the camera and your laptop or computer, and it will as you take photographs, you can get it to automatically send the images across to your laptop.
Yeah, that's really pretty cool. Kind of what I do with my little Samsung Galaxy right now. It automatically uploads my photos straight to my Google account. It's really tightly integrated, and it just syncs up back and forth. It's really quite nice, but it would be nice to have a better camera, which is what I've got now. One of these with the CMOS sensor. I just love the quality of the photos that it's able to capture. If I could have something that would just immediately transmit, that would be wonderful.
Well, if I get my hands on the Lumix SZ25, I'll be sure to let you know. It's a very sweet looking device. So anyway, thanks again for coming on the show, Pinky. This is Michele without Con this week. Thanks to everybody. We'll be back again this time next week, hopefully. And until then, thanks to everyone for listening.